When is silence a bad thing? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, Executive Director of the Institute for Principles Policy. Along with me today is our Vice Chairman and Technical Wizard, Chuck Michaelis.
And as always, I'm glad to be here with you folks and with you, Barry.
And I'm glad that you are here today because we're going to be talking about something that Chuck is very familiar with because of an extensive amount of research that he has done on this particular topic. As you know, if you've been with us this week, we have been discussing a piece of legislation that has been introduced in Ohio's General Assembly by Senator William Coley of Butler County called Senate Joint Resolution Number 2. SJR 2 is a resolution that would put Ohio and its legislative leadership on record as calling the Federal Congress of the United States to begin the process of convening a new constitutional convention for the nation. Now, as we've talked a little bit earlier, we understand that Senator Coley and the co-sponsors on this particular resolution, who I realized here just a little bit ago, Chuck, we hadn't even told people who the co-sponsors are on this, but one of the co-sponsors actually is the senator for this local area here in WLRY's listening audience, Senator Tim Schaefer from Lancaster.
And also one of the co-sponsors, if I'm not mistaken, is my personal state senator, which is Kevin Bacon. Is he
actually no, he's not on here.
I'm thinking of another bill that you and I have worked on together.
Another bill that we've worked on with him.
Okay.
The senators here, it's Senator Dave Burke from the North Central Ohio area, Tom Patton from the Cleveland area, Senator Schaefer, Senator Shannon Jones from Warren County, and Senator Troy Balderson from the Zanesville area, along with Bill Coley. So those senators, there was another senator, but he left the Senate here just a couple of weeks ago, so he no longer will count, and there'll be somebody filling his seat, but hopefully that new member will see the wisdom in not putting his name on this particular piece of legislation.
Tim Grindel.
That was Tim Grindel, yeah. That's right. So there are six senators, all Republican, who are co-sponsors of the legislation. So when this SJR 2 was introduced, these six members of the Senate, at least from what they were told, because, see, ladies and gentlemen, you're getting a little piece of education here about how legislation's made. I've been involved with the legislative process now going on 18 years, and what happens is most people don't see the actual language of legislation that they're asked to co-sponsor as members of the General Assembly. What they get is a one-page synopsis of the best highlights that the member who is introducing the bill wants to use to encourage them to join him in supporting the bill. Oftentimes, what you'll see is that the devil is in the details, and that legislation sometimes will say that it's supposed to do one great thing in general, but when you start digging down into it once it's actually introduced and you have the actual language in front of you, you find out that it really isn't as advertised.
Well, you know, there's an old saying, and it's attributed to Otto von Bismarck, that says anyone who loves the law or sausages should never watch either one being made.
That's right. That's right. As a matter of fact, I think I remember one legislator who had that on a plaque on their desk at some point in my history here with the legislature. But when Senator Coley introduced this legislation to call for an Article 5 constitutional convention, as we've mentioned earlier, there are three things that they think that they want to have the convention do to help not just Ohio but the nation's economy. One is to have a balanced budget requirement, which honestly we really have to have balanced budgets for our homes and our families. Why shouldn't our government have a balanced budget? So I can see why they would say that that's a big concern. Secondly, basically gives the president, the executive office, the ability to veto not a whole bill, but certain items or lines item veto in the bill that's presented to him that the Congress passes. Now, there is some safety in that.
Again, these are desirable things.
These are very desirable things. There is some safety in that because you may have a situation where somebody tries to log roll or stuff a very good bill for something necessary and, dare I say it, constitutional with things that
aren't. A true rarity, yeah.
with things that aren't. And if you had a president who was constitutionally minded, he could take a look at that piece of legislation and say, you know, these things, X, Y, and Z, these are all good, and they fall within the parameters of what we're allowed to do. But yeah, over here, A, B, and C, no, sorry, we're going to get rid of those. Veto, veto, veto those particular items without jeopardizing some of the good things that our federal government should be doing. As we mentioned in an earlier program, that's the DDT idea, defense, diplomacy, and trade. If they're doing things that are within the purview of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, those legitimate functions that they have, and it, or it's related to defense, diplomacy, and trade specifically, then maybe it's a good idea to have the president be able to, if he's going to have to say, nope, you guys didn't do this right, to say, you only did this part wrong.
Well, the real question here is, why do you need a constitutional convention to get that done?
Well, and therein lies the rub, and that is just the nature of politics in general, and it's the nature of our federal government that in order to get it done in that respect, we would have to, we the people, would have to be more diligent in electing congressional representatives who have this in mind to start with.
And there, of course, is the real solution to this problem.
Yes, it is.
Because one of the things that is being ignored in this case, and this is one of those assumptions that we talked about yesterday, one of the bad assumptions, and we really didn't cover this in the detail it really needed to be covered in, and one of the bad assumptions is that there is such a thing as a quote-unquote convention that can be limited to amendments. There is no such thing as a convention that can be limited to making just amendments. And that is because there's a category error being applied here as to who is in control in a convention situation.
Yes.
One of the bad assumptions is that a legislature can control a convention. A legislature cannot control a convention. And there's a reason for that, a very important reason, and that is that the convention represents the sovereign will of the governed.
That is we the people.
We the people. Now, so does the legislature, but the convention has a power that the legislature does not possess. And that is that a convention can dissolve a government and reform a new one.
Yes, and a state legislature certainly does not have that ability to dissolve the government of the state of Ohio and start a new one. As a matter of fact, when we changed the Ohio Constitution and the times that we've changed it, each time has been by convention. Because if we could have done it legislatively, folks, it would be the messiest looking sausage you've ever seen, because every legislator would be trying to put his own personal stamp on how the government's run or how the operations of government benefit their particular economic interests or the region that they serve, their area of the state, in other words. So, you know, honestly, if you had strong legislative officials from Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus, our government, form of government would be to benefit Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus.
Well, just remember that this is a common problem in that a lot of people throughout our history have not understood that a convention basically has carte blanche, and that really, because of the nature of a convention, it all depends, the outcome depends on who gets to choose the delegates.
Ah, but you see, as we talked a little bit about yesterday, Senator Coley and his colleagues who signed on to this bill believe that that's going to be their call to make. If you look, we talked about this a little bit in brief yesterday, that they think, first of all, that they're going to be calling the delegates. Then they believe that they can bind the delegates to only discussing, debating, and voting on the amendments that this resolution specifically states. Now, you and I have talked about this, and the reason why we tagged this program today about silence. Article 5 of the United States Constitution is completely silent to the topic of delegate selection.
It is dead silent. And there are a number of reasons for that. And one of them being that Article 5 really was an afterthought. Nobody thought about it. Nobody worked really hard to get anything put in it. I mean, it was introduced early and it got tossed around to a couple of committees who did basically nothing with it. It took months. And at the end, they finally said, you know, we really better get this thing in there because we want to be able to call another convention if we have to have one, you know, without having to go through the hassle of maybe a shooting revolution or something along that line. And because that's what normally happens. Conventions pop up as the result of disasters in government or revolutionary changes in government. For instance, the two English parliaments that are the main precedents for what we would look at in for an American convention, and they did look at them, was the convention parliaments of 1660 and 1688. Mm-hmm. The 1688 was after what was called the Glorious Revolution. Well, we won't go too much into that history. The fact is there was no king on the throne, and without a king, there can't be parliament, if you understand parliamentary procedure. And so the parliament had to sit as a convention, which means the representatives of the sovereign governed. And the same thing happened in 1660, which was there was no king. Parliament was sitting on its own, which it can't do, and they therefore had to sit as a convention, and they had to basically bring in a new king, which they did. Oliver Cromwell was dead. Now, that being the case, in the 1688 convention, the reason that the British have what's called their constitution and their British Bill of Rights is because the king who was coming on basically demanded to be treated as a constitutional monarch. And so the British Parliament, the Convention Parliament, passed the laws, and voila, William III and Mary came in and sat on the throne as a constitutionally controlled monarch.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, what you didn't know is we're talking about a bill in the Ohio legislature. You're getting English constitutional history today because it's important. Now,
because Ohio is a sovereign state.
That there is that as well.
And this is one of the problems we're running into in the silence aspect.
Yes.
The automatic assumption is because of the supremacy clause in Article 6.
Which we've talked about before, but we're going to talk about again later.
That's right. It creates all kinds of havoc because people don't understand the supremacy clause. Everyone assumes that the federal government will be in charge of the natural assumption is that the federal government will be in charge of choosing delegates to a constitutional convention. And even if they aren't, that they will have the authority to give the criteria by which the delegates would be chosen, which is really important.
And there is something that SJR 2 doesn't speak to in its resolution. I think the assumption that's made is that the delegates or representatives from the state of Ohio are going to be chosen by standards that the state of Ohio is going to put on their delegates. But that's not necessarily. Now, if we look back at historical precedent to the first convention, the delegates were chosen by their respective states, usually by their governors.
And that's because the federal government was, everyone recognized that the states maintain their sovereignty. That is a situation that we have not had in this country now for about 150 years.
That I was going to say, the whole idea of the state being sovereign has kind of gone by the wayside. And basically what we're going to get down to is the state not only may not be able to call the delegates they choose, but will have to go by whatever Congress puts together as far as delegate requirements, which, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at Congress, I don't think we're going to have the average person, myself or Chuck, or probably any of you listening out there, making the cut in delegate selection. But we will have people like liberal law professors.
Oh, there will be special interests.
Special interest yes. Leadership.
Absolutely.
Environmental lobbyists. Occupy Wall Street type folks, and big business investors.
Interestingly, people who advocate Christian involvement in government will be excluded because, after all, separation of church and state.
Yeah, well, another issue that we're going to tackle in a issue of principles and policies. But that's the whole point, ladies and gentlemen. Silence does not mean assent to whatever the state wants. In this day and age, we're looking at Congress calling the shots. That's why this resolution is very dangerous. Stay with us. We'll be back tomorrow for more on this topic
with principles and policies.
Be with us tomorrow at 5:30. We're looking forward to seeing you.